Welcome back, and thank you for listening to episode 286 of the Level Change Podcast. I'm Steffi Haynes, and I'm joined, as always, by my bro, this guy right here, Victor Rodriguez. And today, we are going to talk some news headlines, and we are going to take a look at this weekend's UFC card, which ain't too bad, but of course, it's not at the apex, and that is the reason why. But first, let's check in with Victor and see how his week has been.
My week has been good. I've been taking the boy to swim class. I've been taking my own time as well on free days to let him get acclimated. I'm really enjoying this whole thing. This whole being a dad thing, man. It's been pretty fun. I'm enjoying a lot of this right here. Got a lot of stuff going on. I'm off this week from the day job, so that means a lot of cooking, a lot of cleaning, and even a fun little day trip. So by the time you hear this, I'll probably be at the DC Zoo yet again, making fun of the leopards and the zebras, and of course, looking at how malnourished they are, because good God, that zoo, it's a fucking mess. Other than that, yeah, I think I'm going to collect those $15 that Barack Obama owes me, because he knows what he did back in 1998 in Detroit. He knows. I know he knows. And yeah, we're here with the under the MMA draw umbrella. I'm here, of course, with my sis. And this, as I always say, this is one of the biggest highlights of my week, and I'm happy to be here.
All right. So first story that we're going to take a look at comes from this past weekend's UFC Vegas 89 card. Igor Severino was summarily dismissed, like on the spot, for biting. Dana White gave Lima. At first, he was going to give him a $25,000 bonus for the bite. And then when he saw that Lima had gone and gotten it tattooed, the bite mark was tattooed. I mean, this bite was pretty heavy duty. I mean, he came damn close to breaking the skin. The indent marks are pretty deep. So he races over, he gets it tattooed, and Dana White decides, you know what? I was going to give you $25,000. Now I'm going to give you $50,000. And I think that's fantastic. However, Igor Severino has not only been fired from the UFC, he is still unpaid right now. And I only am talking about this case to set something straight. Listen, the athletic commission is not going to keep his check indefinitely. They are probably holding on to it right now while they figure out what the fine is going to be, because it's not every day you get someone biting someone else, especially in an organization as big as the UFC, where that probably there's going to be a little more scrutiny on the situation. They're not going to take his whole check. They literally cannot do that, but they are probably withholding it until they figure out a proper fine and punishment for him. So that is where we're sitting right now. If anybody actually thinks that they're just going to keep his check and send him on his merry way, it cannot happen that way.
Legally, that can't happen. Would I be too mad if that is what ended up happening? I mean,
I would. I would, because I disagree with everything he did wholeheartedly. I mean, you just can't bite people. But I also, listen, when you get fired from a job and you go back to get your last paycheck, you know, that's your right. You worked for that.
Yeah. He made the weight. He did the preparation. No, I get that. And then, you know, here's the thing. I wouldn't be too mad if he had to eat, you know, half or whatever.
Sure.
If they ended up taking maybe more than that, I'd be, you know what? Fine. Because look, man, let's not make any bones about it. That's a dirty motherfucker right there. Mm-hmm. That is beyond, like, I don't know. Some of you younger whippersnappers might not remember this. I remember back in the day, back in my day, we had a guy named Pedro Nobre. All right. He faked being hit in the head with a knee while being down on the ground. And he played the whole thing and everybody was booing. And this guy was a former LFA champ. This dude was really fucking good. And he resorted to that. And you know what happened? He got kicked out of the UFC right away. Before the press conference was over, that motherfucker probably had his walking papers. And that was good. I don't want a guy like that near me. You're burnt and you're bust. Who's going to sign you? Where are you going to go? It's going to be real tough for you to get those big paydays now. You know, because it's only going to be some rinky-dink organization. No one big is going to be able to roll the dice on you unless a lot of time has passed. And, I mean, there's just it's Nobody wants to be associated with that level of stink. So on that level, when it comes to Severino giving the guy the bite, motherfucker, what did you think was going to happen? You thought they didn't use instant replay? You think this is just because it's at the Apex and it's some, like some local volleyball gym with no camera equipment? They got replay, bitch. They see what you're doing. It's just so weird to me that he thought he could get away with it. But then on the flip side, the part that made me upset was Lima getting, okay, he gets the tattoo, which number one, I don't know how safe it is to get a tattoo on a spot that maybe might be infected. I don't think it broke skin, but maybe it's not a great idea to do right away. But then Dana gives the guy a bonus just for the tattoo, which, okay, what are we doing here? You have the money to pay these people better. But no, they got to jump through hoops. Now he finds it personally amusing to him, and now he's going to pay him a little better. Doesn't that feel a little gross?
Indeed.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's exactly the whole, that's the real ick factor here. I'm glad the dude got paid. You know, this is probably the what he should have been paid as a, at a base level to take the fight to begin with. But good God, fuck that, man. That's not the way to do business.
I am reminded of a guy. I don't know if you were watching MMA back then, but there was a guy named Mike Kyle.
Ah, I knew you were going to go with Mike Kyle. Yes.
Mike Kyle was a very probably the most famous biter before this one.
Yeah.
And he was excommunicado from literally all the promotions for several years before he finally was able to get back in and start fighting again. But yeah, Mike Kyle was, he had a very egregious biting incident. No one lost their whole purse. So let's just put that out there right now. It's not going to happen, folks. Stop freaking out.
Wait, didn't he bite Wes Sims?
Yes.
And everybody was like, well, Wes Sims, he was a dirty fighter too, so yes. Fuck him. Like, nobody cared.
But it was a really egregious bite, left a full, huge mark on Wes Sims, was bruising up almost as you watched.
It was it's like when Houston Alexander threw that headbutt, and I think it was in Bellator. I was like, buddy, come on, man. You can't fucking do that. Like, we all see it, dude. You're not slick.
So anyways, let's put that little rumor to bed and let's get to the next. And this is not a rumor. Ex-UFC champion Brandon Moreno is stepping away from fighting to focus on mental health, family, and other endeavors. And here's the thing. I am happy for him. He's been fighting almost nonstop for the past, you know, three and a half years. And I fully support anyone that needs to get their head straight and for them to come out and say, hey, I would like to do this. I would like to get this together. What more can you say here other than that it's a great move for him? Oh, I know what more can be said. This is going to extend his contract. You know why? Because he is taking a step back. He memorialized it with a video. And I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to Hey Not the Face, John Nash, but if you retire or take a step back and you put it formally in writing or video, you put it out on your social media, they can and most likely will add years to your contract for it. So this could very possibly be adding years to his contract when he finally does come back, if he does. Which we all know he will, because they always come back. Very few people actually stay gone. Khabib, Ronda, people like that. They actually stay gone. I don't know that Brandon Moreno is going to stay gone because, one, he fights at flyweight. And we all know they don't get paid the same as other champions. And two, because they always come back. That's just the bottom line. I don't believe that Brandon Moreno will stay gone.
Victor. I mean, it's really unfortunate, but you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. And, you know, he's still young and he could still hang with a lot of these dudes. So I'm sure that he's not. I'm sure this is one of those situations where he's going to stay young and still feel like, well, I think I've done everything I could. Nah, man, you won the belt and all that. But you know that you still got that competitive fire and you can still physically go out there and do the thing. Then that means you're going to come back. Because as you said, flyweight, those guys don't get paid, right? So what else is left? Of course they're going to do something like this. So I fully expect him to return at some point. However, I'm really glad, as are you, that he's taking this time away. Because, man, it's a grind. How long has this guy been going nonstop?
You want to know what happens next month?
What's that?
His 13th anniversary for being a pro. He is only 30. Mm. And he's been doing this for 13 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's crazy.
It really is. 31 fights.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, sir.
31 fucking fights. You know what the weird thing is? We don't really talk about this, but he was training with James Krause. Mm-hmm. And he had to adjust finding another environment and having to work through that. And that's not easy to do when you're riding high and when you're doing what he was doing at that point in his career. It's really, really difficult. So I'm really curious to see how he shakes that off and makes his way back. Maybe this is what he needs. Maybe he should have stepped away a little sooner to sort of readjust and find another camp where he'd be more at home. I don't know. Maybe there's more than just finding another locale and another team and everything else. It could be a combination of factors, as we always say. So we'll see.
Speaking of James Krause, I wonder what's going on with that gambling probe, because, boy, we have a lot of sports gambling issues going on currently. In the NBA, you got Jonte with his own Discord where he's telling people what to trade and bet on. And over here in baseball, we've got Otani's translator, his interpreter, who's supposedly reaching right into Otani's bank account and settling his outstanding gambling debts. I mean, to tell you, you bring up James Krause and we are at the hub, because that was the first big gambling sports scandal of the past, you know, several years. And that thing just literally dried up and died with no answer for it. You know what I mean? We don't know what the hell is going on over there. It just literally closed the door. What happened there? We don't have an answer at all.
I don't know. I'm just thinking that Pete Rose is sitting somewhere filing his fingernails going like, he's doing the... he's doing the meme from, James Franco with the noose around his neck going, first time? It's terrible, man.
Very, very bad. Now, let's talk about Chris Weidman for a second
here. Oh, God.
Chris Weidman is talking about what the odds are that he retires after this fight. And he said something that actually made a lot of sense to me. He said it's not really about what happens in the fight. He says that what will determine if he retires is how his training camp goes. He says, because you're always going in with injuries. And it's when you get to the point where you no longer look forward to actually training, to getting to the gym, to being around your friends and doing that work over and over. He says that when that happens, when the pain supersedes the motivation and drive to get in there, that's when he's going to quit. Now, I think that makes a lot of sense, but at the same time, I also feel like you need to pay attention to what your body is doing, because he said this. For me, in particular, it seems to be worse than maybe even other people in this sport, because I have already had 10 knee surgeries on this leg alone.
No.
Now they take a titanium rod and they drill it through the top of my knee, through my knee joint, which is already arthritic and having tons of issues, and they drill it down into my knee. So now I don't have the muscle in my lower leg like I used to protect my knee and to protect my leg, my quad, everything just atrophied. Then I got the nerve issues from the bone popping through the skin like that, and the muscle, the nerve. There's just tons of things going on in there. That's a lot you've got to deal with. Jesus Christ, man, listen to your body. You're saying so many smart things, but the dumbest thing is that you are not already retired. Victor.
Why are we doing this? Why are we continuing to do this? I don't understand, man. This shit is just not, even if you're looking for cementing some kind of legacy, it's just like he's going out sadder every time. And we can all see it. Somehow he can't. And I know I said this before. You look at the way, if you were around when he beat Anderson Silva, if you look at the motivation that he had and all the goofy shit that he was saying, he's visualizing and he's got this. He wrote on a piece of paper, I will defeat Anderson Silva on such and such date. And he put it on his fridge and he'd stare at that shit every morning and he'd go out for a run and he'd go out and hit pads and he'd go out and he'd wrestle. And God damn it, he went out and he beat that man's ass so bad. And he did it twice. I mean, think what you will of the injury. He was putting it to him, right? That kind of determination. What I always say, right? That level of psychosis that you need to have that drive. It looks good on the come up, but then it looks like this. There's situations where it manifests itself in this display of a guy who is just doing all, like, the juice cannot be worth the squeeze, man. The medical bills you're facing for the rest of your natural fucking life are probably going to swallow up any bit of money that you make from here on in. And I know he's probably cashing pretty big checks relative to some other dudes in his weight class. But God damn, dude, we ain't got to do this, man. Like, you got kids, bro. You want to see them grow and thrive. You ain't got to do this shit. I just, people say that you shouldn't tell, fans should not be telling fighters when to retire for some reason or another, some sort of weird moral or ethical thing. They're grown individuals. They can do what they want. Somebody got to talk this man off that fucking ledge, man. This convo should have been happening years ago. But here we are. Here we are yet again. Lamenting the future prospects of a guy who should have hung it up a long, long fucking time ago.
All right. So let's take a look at some fights this week before we save the rest of our headlines for our bonus section. Or should we save the fights, picking of the fights for the bonus section? What would you say?
Roll the dice, whatever. You flip a coin, whatever it is you feel like.
I think I'm going to put the fight picking in the bonus section. And I think we're going to roll some more headlines because I have a Gina Carano headline. And this is the headline. Gina Carano explains why a fight with Ronda Rousey never happened in the UFC, but she is confident that she would have won. No, you would not have, because your resume up to the point you fought Cyborg was ridiculous. Come on, Gina, you were fighting the dregs. I mean, you never fought, what was her name? The Dutch girl, the really, you know who I'm talking
not
about?
Jermaine. You're talking about Marluse Kunin.
Marluse Kunin. She never fought Marluse. She never fought Jermaine. She never fought any of those people. And when she fought someone that was worth their salt and Chris Cyborg. Now, sure, Chris Cyborg is a different athlete altogether. But you know what? At the time, when they wanted her to fight Ronda, which would have been around 2014, Ronda would have starched her. I don't know if it would have been a starching of a submission or a starching of the collar with a knockout, because, you know, Ronda did get one or two of those as well. But I don't think that Gina would have been able to provide much competition for Ronda. I disagree with her in that regard, but that's neither here nor there because it's an opinion thing. But I do want to talk about what she had to say. What's funny is that Ronda Rousey was never their first choice to start a women's division. Yet that's the narrative that they put out. But according to Gina Carano, Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta reached out to her before she fought Cyborg.
Mm.
It was after the Cyborg fight was announced, but before she actually got there. And she said that her and Dana had had a conversation right before I fought Cyborg. Dana and Lorenzo had me in their office, and basically they were like, we'd like you to come over and be our company's first female fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't do that because I have my promises and my contract to Strikeforce.
Right.
So then she moves forward and she's talking about 2014 and how they reached out to her again. And Dana White later would say that she was the hardest human being that they have ever dealt with. Now, mind you, they also said that about Nick Diaz, Nate Diaz, Fedor, Dan Henderson, and Rampage, because I went and I looked for headlines where Dana White said that X was the hardest person to work with, and those headlines all popped up. So I'm not gonna put much stock into Dana saying that, but here's her side of the story. She said, and I quote, I needed 6 months because, first of all, weight cutting for me during that time, I would struggle because all of the women were in the 135-pound division and I could only get down to 145. But there was only twice in my career where I got down, one time to 136 and another time to 139. And that is like chopping off a leg for me, for sure. It was so difficult for me, but that's where all the women were at that time, because there weren't a lot of women. As I said, I sat down with Dana and said, I wish you guys would have approached me 5 years ago, because I've been waiting for this. So I just need some time and I need you to keep it quiet, please. Keep it really quiet, because I did not have a gym. I would have to go and reimmerse myself into a gym, which when I go in a gym, people put cameras on me and you have to find and build your team. And I was not living in Las Vegas, which is where my team would have likely been. So I was living in LA and it would have been hard, and I needed to rebuild a team and to do it right. Dana, and I love him now, he's been amazing. But Dana is Dana. He immediately started talking about it, and it made my life very difficult to try and get to go into that. It's a very difficult thing to try and do both of those things at once. Because she was also getting offers in Hollywood. And in my head, I'm just so passionate about the storytelling. And the last couple years, I've just been passionate about trying to get back into that. I do absolutely believe that I would have won against Ronda Rousey, because I pack a hell of a punch. Mm-hmm. I know how she punches. I punch like a trucker. Mm-hmm. She would have the edge on the ground, obviously, but I'm scrambly. It's no disrespect, and I'm sure she would have said the same thing, that she would win, but that's just something that I know. After you've been punched like that, she got shook twice by Amanda Nunes and Holly Holm. I'm one of the hardest punchers that women's mixed martial arts has ever seen. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Now listen. I've actually seen Gina Carano fight live, because I saw her when she fought Julie Kedzie. I was live at that event. Okay, let me read her record to you. Leticia Pestova, Rosie Sexton, Elena Maxwell, Julie Kedzie, Tanya Evinger, probably the one and only aside from Chris Cyborg, because Caitlin Young, God bless her for winning the hook and shoot tournament. She has not done well, you know, consistently since then. Mm-hmm. Kelly Kobold, and then Chris Cyborg. Now, that resume does not hold water next to Ronda's. I'm sorry. I mean, one of Ronda's former opponents is still a champion right now in Liz Carmouche.
I just don't understand this whole, I'm the hardest puncher. One of the hardest punchers? Are you, though? Are you really? I don't know, lady. Like, what are we doing here? The first meeting really mystifies me. Because then why did you take the fucking meeting? Why would you go to their offices if you were already under contract with Strikeforce? Mm. But why? What did you think was going to happen? Now this, if man, you know what? This makes so much more sense. Like, yeah, you've always been this fucking dumb because this is not. When you talk about what was happening while she was in Strikeforce, fine. What happens? Strikeforce gets purchased. It gets absorbed into the UFC. All this stuff happens. And then 2014, I remember this. There was the comeback fight that they were looking to do. But she had blamed Dana for jumping the gun with the announcement. And therefore, the fight fell apart and all that. And okay. Listen, at that point, would she have beaten Ronda? No. No, not standing, not anywhere. And hey, look, this whole thing about saying, well, Ronda got rocked by Amanda and Holly Holm. Oh, you mean two women that hit pretty fucking hard? And I don't know if you saw this already. There was an interview, I think it was on Cage Side Seats, if I'm not mistaken, where Ronda discusses how she had suffered a series of concussions doing judo as a teenager and how they followed her and how sometimes she would get stung in a few fights, but she just pushed on through. And it just kept building, and she didn't really say anything about it until now. Not in a manner that would be making excuses or construed as such. But a lot of this does make sense. A lot of her reactions to getting hit make a lot more sense when you put it in that context. And I don't doubt her. I don't think she's not being truthful because I know people that have trained in judo, and they've had concussions too. So, yeah, sure. Let's say that Gina fights Ronda, and she manages to snap her head back with a few. Was that really going to be enough? Mm-mm. Was she ever really as well-rounded? You are, by your own admission, stating that you weren't training, that you were on hiatus. You know who was still in the gym every fucking day? Ronda. That's who. And maybe she was in there with Edmund Tarverdian throwing loopy-ass haymakers, but she was still putting in that fucking work. What kind of conditioning was Gina going to have? What kind of discipline to get to the weight that she needed to be was she going to have? Was she going to do it at 135? Probably not. I mean, it would probably have to be 135 because Ronda wouldn't fight above that, or at least not against Cyborg. But what are we doing here? What kind of retconning is this? I don't buy this, man.
I mean,
Gina's been moving too goofy for me to believe any of this.
Her I hit like a trucker comment cracked me up because her three TKOs or KOs came against whoever Leticia Pestova is. That was her very first fight back in June of 2006. Rosie Sexton, who'd never had a strong career, and Caitlin Young, which was a doctor stoppage, again, not a strong career. But when she fought people that could hold their own, when she fought Julie Kedzie, it had to go to decision. When she fought Tanya Evinger, that ended in a submission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but see, also, Rosie was undersized for that division, too.
Yeah, Elena Maxwell, she was tough as nails. Decision.
And Elena Maxwell was not very, I mean, no disrespect to her, but she wasn't really setting the world on fire.
She was not. Ditto Kelly Cobalt. You know, Kelly Cobalt took her to a decision. Yeah. So her punching power is not what she thinks it is.
No.
You know, and I had to bring this story in because Gina's out here just knitting lies again. And who would have thought that back when she was our darling, who would have thought that she would just be knitting lies the way that she is? Whole sweaters, whole quilts, Afghans full of lies.
And it's like Eric Adams. You're lying about the dumbest shit. Like, why?
All right. So our next topic, and this one's a good one. His Royal Highness Dana White has once threatened to resign from the UFC in defense of Joe Rogan amid the 2022 controversy surrounding Joe back when someone stitched together a video of all the times where Joe Rogan has said the N-word. Mm-hmm. I wish that somebody had gone to the Wayback Machine for his forums where he littered it all over the forums, too. I know. I used to be a moderator there. Anyways, to get back to the story of Dana White, he basically had this to say about when Joe Rogan came under fire when that video surfaced. And, you know, he was hanging under threat of being canceled. And that is how the reporter put it to Dana. That is not how I am saying it. I never thought that Joe was, quote, under threat of being canceled, because I have come to determine and have determined for many years now that Joe Rogan is uncancelable, because there is too many stupid people that will buy into whatever he has to say. So there's no, and there's never going to be a threat of Joe being canceled short of murder. Seriously. Anywho, this is what Dana had to say. Anybody who is with me, has been with me, knows that when you're with me, you're with me. It's a two-way street. It's not a one-way street. I'm not one of these guys that is just going to roll over. It's like going through COVID. I wasn't laying any of these people off. Some of these people have been with me for 20 years. We're going to lay them off? This motherfucker will burn before I do that to my people. Now, before I go on with the rest of the quotes, I would just like to point out that when the UFC got sold, what happened to Bert, the logistics guy? What happened to Stitch, the cut guy?
Wow.
Very famously with Stitch, that dude was never my friend.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to Goldberg, the commentator, the beloved commentator? He was the play-by-play guy. So what happened to him? You know, what happened to all those execs and all of those people in the back in the offices that got laid off, that were there with you from the start? What happened to them? Now, let me go on. None of that type of stuff is going to happen while I'm here. I can't say what's going to happen when I leave, but when I'm here, the people who are with me and have been with me, they know exactly what's up. And Joe knows what's up. And again, it's a two-way street. Joe Rogan has been very loyal to me, and I am very loyal to Joe Rogan. Early on, nobody understood about the ground game. Joe Rogan would walk you through what was happening literally before it would happen. He would tell you the setup, what was going to come next, everything. He absolutely articulated it perfectly, brilliantly, and people at home started to understand. The impact that Joe Rogan has had and continues to have on the sport is immeasurable. He's the biggest podcaster in the world, and he is on the UFC pay-per-views 14 times a year, and he's always talking about the sport. It's immeasurable what this guy has done for the company and for the sport. First of all, he is not on 14 pay-per-views a year. You are lucky if you get Rogan on 7 or 8 now, because he refuses to go out of the country.
That's
so
right.
Any pay-per-view that ends up in London, in Abu Dhabi, whatever, Joe Rogan is not on those. So revise your numbers, Mr. White, or I'm going to think you can't fucking count unless it's to count the money you're taking from your fighters. Joe Rogan back in the day did do those things, but Joe Rogan phones it in now. It seems to me that Joe Rogan doesn't do any prep work anymore on the fighters.
He's admitted as much.
Yeah. And so because of that, I don't feel like Rogan is turning in his best work. The UFC must be paying him mega millions for him to keep sticking around. Maybe he intertwines his fame and popularity with the two. Maybe he feels like if he actually leaves the UFC, some measure of his popularity will drop, because now he's not linked inextricably with a promotion that promotes male dominant violence. Because let's face it, there's a lot more males in the UFC than females. So anyways, there was one thing in here that is true, though. The impact that Joe Rogan has had and continues to have on the sport is immeasurable. And that is absolutely true. 100%. Because, as I said earlier, no matter what Joe says, there's always a swathe, a huge throng of fans of him, of the UFC, of combat sports in general, of just dumb ideas in general, that will follow him blindly and believe every goddamn word he says. even when he's proven wrong on his own fucking show by his own fucking producer, I can see people in the comments trying to defend Joe's stance on things he's literally proven wrong on by his own producer.
He hates that shit too.
Jamie, pull that up for me. Jamie, pull it up for me.
Yeah.
And Jamie will pull it up for him. And yeah, Joe, you're wrong here. And yeah, really, I don't see it that way. Can you look up another source? Jamie will pull up five other sources saying exactly the same thing. And Joe will have him pull up five more.
You know what bothers me about that specifically is the fact that you can't solve every discussion, every argument with that. It doesn't work that way. Some complex conversations require a lot more nuance and research than just a Google search. But fine, that's not really why we're here. Listen, man, I don't know if we mentioned this before, but one of the things that really stuck out to me when that happened, when that supercut of Joe saying the N-word came out, was the immediate reaction that he had. He's like, you know, the people that really stuck with me were actually conservatives. Yeah. I wonder why. It's because you said the N-word. It's not because of the COVID denialism. Mm-hmm. It was about that. It's funny how they just showed up right there. And look, to be fair, yeah, this seemed like a perfect opportunity for people to immediately pounce on him with all the other bad shit, deservedly so. There was a pile on, sure. And I can see where some people were like, oh, come on, man. This is like a campaign here. They're coming after our guy. But you got to also admit your guy's fucking up. I mean, let's be real. Nobody was clamoring for his show to get canceled. And I hate when people talk about anybody in particular being quote unquote canceled. It doesn't mean anything. Being held accountable for your fucking misdeeds is not canceled. When has that worked? Who's been actually canceled? Mel Gibson?
Kevin Spacey is getting movie roles. There's never really a quote cancel.
Mel Gibson tacitly admitted to punching his wife as she held mm-hmm. his fucking child mm-hmm. and openly wished that a pack of black men raped his wife.
And then he told her he would plant her body in the Rose Garden.
And he's still getting roles. Mm-hmm. He's still making money out here. Mm-hmm. So what the fuck are we talking about? Unless you actually talk about things that have to do with going to prison or, you know, Bill Cosby. That's something where you could say, okay, maybe that kind of worked. But that's not really canceling, is it? Canceling started.
He's out already.
Canceling started as, hey, we as a segment of this audience are not going to fuck with this guy anymore. And that was it. But now it's been co-opted by people who want to maintain their victim complex. Mm-hmm. Pat McAfee, I've been canceled by both parties. What the fuck are you talking about? There was no political movement to stop you in any way, shape, or form. People were mad at you and called you out for enabling Aaron Rodgers and for going out there and accusing people of doing shit and going on these weird rants to the point where he implied that Jimmy Kimmel was going to be tied up at the Epstein logs and that was going to be coming out in a court of law. That's the fucking problem. It's the lack of accountability. And this the biggest thing in our society today, and mark my words, you're going to see it more and more after you hear this. It's the Grand Theft Auto effect. When you steal a car in Grand Theft Auto that's super hard to get, suddenly it's everywhere. You're going to see it now after I open your eye to this. The biggest fucking problem in American discourse today, and that comes in and outside of sports, is the whole phenomenon of don't be mad at me. That's what it is. And that's what happened with Joe mm-hmm. Rogan. And that's what's happening with Dana. That's what happened with all this shit right here is the whole don't be mad at me. No, dude, you fucked up. And instead of admitting that you fucked up and instead of making amends or doing something in some sort of course correction, all that anybody wanted from Joe Rogan on his podcast when he was doing all the COVID denialism and inviting all these COVID denialists, because he might say he's anti-vaccine, but that sample size of people that you were having on the show denotes something very, very contrary to that. All people wanted was a group of doctors got together and said, hey, Spotify, maybe you should have a disclaimer because what this guy's doing is bullshit. You are going to ruin people's lives because you've got the biggest podcast in the world and the number one misinformation agent going out there and tangibly fucking harming people. Mm-hmm. And you refuse to do anything about it. No one was saying take your show away. You think Spotify was in any way going to take away their big biggest cash cow? Fuck you.
No. What they did was, not even 2 years later, they cut him an even bigger deal. So he went from making $150 million. Now he has a $300 million deal with Spotify.
And good for him. I don't begrudge him making his money. If he's making them... If but the money he's making still, them is he's probably even underpaid for the shit he's making them.
He's still, I don't know about that, but he is still putting out very harmful information.
Yes.
There's and no continue, two ways about so. It. And this from a guy that back when I, you know, everybody knows that I've interviewed Joe Rogan probably more than any single person has. And because I've interviewed him probably 10 times. But one of the things that always stuck out to me when I would interview him, his famous line, science. Gotta prove it with science.
Yeah, yeah.
And what the fuck happened to that guy? Because he is the antithesis of science today.
It's because it's the same thing that happened with Bill Maher. They, when it comes to the environment, science. We need to look at the science. When it comes to space, yes. Notice that they both have that in common. Mm-hmm. When it's the environment, when it's animal stuff, animal rights, when it comes to, you know, factory farming, those guys are, yes, we need to look at the science. The moment you say, hey, you need to do something for the greater good by maybe not going out as much in public and maybe getting a vaccine. And fuck well, you. Don't get mad at me. Fuck you.
But he's totally turned around on science now. I mean, totally a 180. Personally, I feel that when the money started rolling in, and that money was basically coming from, because for a long time he lived and died by the grace of his sponsors. He never died by them because he shot straight to out of the stratosphere. He never had a bad day. But he went from having sponsors to going on to the Spotify platform. And so now he doesn't have to worry about sponsors. And I feel like when he went to Spotify was when the great 180 hit. He was already inching that way. But the full 180 was almost overnight, and it came with a lot of money and a lot of realization that his fans were these idiots that didn't really want to hear about the science. They wanted him to parrot their crazy conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. And Joe quickly realized that conspiracy theories gained him a lot more followers than preaching science like he used to.
Yeah.
So, in my personal opinion, the almighty dollar was the biggest factor in Joe's turnaround. All right.
It might be. I mean, I think it just certainly gave him more freedom to do that. So that's, you know, because that seemed to just be a thing that he was already turning to either way.
Well, he was doing it in an incremental fashion, but only because he was noticing trends. He also surrounded himself with other comedians, but also with producer types that could monitor those trends as well. Even when he wasn't doing the podcast and he was just doing his Rogan board forums, that was a springboard for him to test the waters. I wish you could have been in there when that forum was big. It was like a direct competitor to Sherdog and the Underground. And it was definitely a testing ground for him to figure out which way the wind was blowing, for sure. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we need to get in. Sorry, I backed away from my mic there. So sorry about that. We need to get into this card, which is not bad. But again, as I noted, it is not at the apex. But this is going to be our bonus content for today. So if you're not a subscriber, you know what to do. Hit the button. If you are a subscriber, you also know what to do. Stick around. We'll be right back in about 3 seconds with some picks and predictions. To access the bonus content of this episode, you must be a paid subscriber. To do that, go to themmadrawpodcast.substack.com and subscribe today.